helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Every year, people look forward, hoping things will get better. And at the end of pretty much every year, they're disappointed. Have you ever considered why? Now, many of the people I've been talking to lately have hope because they believe someone will come forward and fix whatever problem is upmost in their mind. Some think that with the Republicans controlling the House of Representatives, they'll make things better. Others are placing their hope in the fact that the Democrats now have a majority in the Senate. Some see changes in state or local governments as the source of, if not salvation, at least an improvement. Meanwhile, others are looking at the courts, especially with a new justice on the Supreme Court, as a ray of hope for the future. Now, by taking a look at what's been going on lately and what laws are going into effect in this new year, maybe we can get a better idea of what, if anything, will truly get better in 2023. Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. Here we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me here today. I'm glad you could join me in this new year. I just wish I had better news for you. I keep repeating Reagan's admonition to trust but verify. And I'm amazed sometimes at not only how many people will put their trust in certain things and never verify to see if it's true, but how many people still put their trust in things when the data is shown to them that it's not true. I've been dealing with that a lot lately. In fact, very interestingly, I did an article and a video about the Brunson versus Adams case. If you're not familiar, I talked about it a few days ago on the radio. It's a case of Mr. Brunson claiming that some 300 and some odd members of the House and Senate committed treason by violating their oath of office, by not exercising a duty that when certain members of the Congress pointed out problems, they didn't actually go off and have an investigation. Now, I keep pointing out to people that Congress has no control over the counting of the presidential electors, none whatsoever, their votes. All they're there to do is observe, that Congress doesn't have a constitutional ability to challenge, although there has been, the federal law has put one in place, that the Congress doesn't have a duty to challenge an election when there's evidence brought up, that not doing so is not a crime, it is not treason. And the idea that the courts, even the Supreme Court, could remove a president, a vice president, and hundreds, the vast majority of Congress is not only unconstitutional, it's paramount to a coup d'etat. Doesn't matter. I still have people vehemently supporting this move. Now, the part that bothers me is, you know, I'm saddened that people can't see what is obvious. But what really saddens me is how much time and effort and money are being put into this illegal, unconstitutional move that could be better used to actually fix the problems and do so legally, constitutionally. Getting the states that have voter fraud issues, getting laws passed to help with that. Getting things put in place so that when states do violate the Constitution in the appointment of their electors, that we have an understanding of how to go about fixing that. That is all being ignored because one man has made a bold claim that the Supreme Court is currently looking at. They haven't agreed to hear the case, at least as of the last time I checked. But it's all of this hope of the future is all coming in, is still coming about into, as I said, effectively a coup d'etat. Now, again, that's my opinion that's a coup d'etat. You know, we're going to throw out the Constitution and substitute the Supreme Court as the supreme ruler of the land, that they get to not only decide cases, but they're going to decide who is and is not allowed to serve in Congress, all in violation of the Constitution. But that's not really the focus of the episode today. To me, that was a jumping off point into looking at what's been going on and seeing, do those of us who have a hope for the future, are they basing it on anything, or does it seem to be more wishful thinking? For example, last year, there was a lot of hope placed on the red wave, the idea that Republicans would be swept into office, gain control of the House and the Senate, and be able to change things, which didn't turn out. But let's take a look at a couple of other things of what's been going on. One that caught my attention, I don't know if you've noticed this, but we've talked in the past about there's a House committee that's been trying to get access to President Trump's tax returns. And they're doing so because they believe that, well, President Trump and many of his organizations, many of his businesses, violated what's called the Emoluments Clause, which is found in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, I believe. And it reads, "No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state." So I guess Congress believes, or the members of this committee believe, that the president, through his businesses, received an emolument, received money. That's what an emolument is, right? He received some sort of pay from a foreign entity. Now, this is kind of interesting, and I'm not a tax lawyer. I don't pretend to be a tax lawyer. But if you're saying that no officer of the United States can accept a payment from a foreign entity, and let's say Trump is not the first person that comes to mind as someone we might want to investigate. But we're dealing with partisanship, so that's not surprising. So the committee, they got a judge to agree that under the U.S. tax code, Title 26 of the U.S. code, Section 6103, that Congress had the ability to gain access to this data as part of an investigation into the violation of the Emoluments Clause. Now, I did take a look at Section 6103, and there is a section, Section F, which deals with disclosure of tax returns to committees of Congress. But I want to back up just a step before that, because what Congress is doing, and this is a habit, and by the way, both parties do this, is political prosecution. See, Congress is invested with the power of legislation. All legislative power is vested in Congress. Article 1, Section 1, Clause 1. But this isn't legislation. This is execution. The execution of the law. And if you go back to our founding fathers and they talk about the separation of powers, you don't want an entity both writing the laws and executing the laws, much less judging the laws. So this is a violation of the precept of separation of powers. It's a violation of the Constitution because you have Congress acting like the president, saying there is a crime. There's an allegation of a crime. We must investigate it, because this isn't about writing law. This is about charging an individual that is let's say they're politically disfavored by the majority in the House. As it sat when the request was made. Now, back to the law. Section F says that the House Ways and Means Committee, along with a few others, upon written request from the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee of the House of Representatives, also the Finance Committee of the Senate or the Joint Committee on Taxation, the secretary shall furnish such committee with any return or return information specified in such request. Except, all right, so hang on a second. So here you have these three committees, right? The House Ways and Means Committee, the Senate Finance Committee, or the Joint Committee on Taxation. All they have to do is the chairman has to put a request to the IRS. The secretary of the IRS will hand over information. Isn't that a violation of the Fourth Amendment? You filed tax returns. You filed information with Congress, where is the probable cause requirement? Where is the warrant? There isn't one. So this law is repugnant to the Constitution because it violates the Fourth Amendment. Therefore, this law is void. Of course, courts don't pay any attention to the Constitution anymore. They haven't for decades. But let me go back to the rest. See, I didn't finish there. You might have noticed I was about to go on. Because it says, except that any return or returned information which can be associated with or otherwise identified directly or indirectly, a particular taxpayer shall be furnished to such committee only when sitting in closed executive session unless such taxpayer otherwise consents in writing to such disclosure. Meaning, okay, the House Ways and Means Committee filed a request to get access to these returns. The court said, well, listen, you know, 6103, subsection, you know, section F, yes, the committee has this authority. We don't worry about the fact that it's unconstitutional, but that data can only be furnished when they're sitting in closed executive session unless Donald Trump in writing consents to the disclosure, which means when the House Ways and Means Committee voted to release those records, they committed a crime. See, when Chairman Neal released that information publicly, they violated 6103 Section F1. They committed a crime. They have violated Mr. Trump's rights protected by the Constitution and laws of the United States. They had performed an unreasonable search. There's no exigent circumstance. There's no reason not to get a warrant. They didn't get a warrant. A judge erroneously allowed this to go through without a warrant. But then they took that private information that was supposed to remain in closed executive session and released it publicly. Now, I just want you to think about that for just a minute or two. Imagine, you know, we say, well, it's Donald Trump. He was president. Does that mean he doesn't have any rights anymore? Does that mean there are situations where the Constitution doesn't matter anymore? Does that mean that your rights don't matter anymore? We only know about this because it's President Trump. What if it was somebody else? What if it was you? What if, let's say that you happened to be at the Capitol on January 6th, so you got caught up in an illegal search of geofencing data. And then they decided, you know what? The Congress says, we're going to do an investigation to see how this January 6th was financed. So they start asking for your tax records without a warrant. And they decide, you know what? We're going to release this because it's a political coup. See, this is what happens when we ignore the rule of law when it's inconvenient. And while you may be happy with the short-term outcome, the long-term consequences are not just destructive. They're corrosive to the very idea of freedom and liberty. Now, let's look at the flip side. Several Republican members of the House Judiciary Committee, they were requesting information from the White House. Information regarding the border, fentanyl issues, energy crisis, the Afghanistan withdrawal, COVID origins, even the possibility of Biden's family peddling his influence. So they made a request to the White House. Now, what's interesting is the White House said, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. And what made the news wasn't simply the fact that the White House said no, was that they published it. They leaked this story to Politico, by the way, left-leaning, you know, political news outlet, before actually telling the representatives who requested the data. In other words, it was another political move. Now, I'm sure there are those out there who say, well, see, you know, when the House has control, or the GOP has control of the House, well, then they can do the same thing to Biden that the Democrats did to Trump. They can go after the tax returns and subpoena all this information, get all this. You notice anything about that? See, that reminds me very much of the words of George Washington. The alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge natural to party dissension, is itself a frightful despotism. See, now, they're not looking for facts. They're investigating people looking for crimes. They're not looking for who committed the crime. They're investigating people seeking who they can charge with a crime. Do you really think that's going to get any better in 2023? You're going to have the Republicans pushing one way. You're going to have the Democrats pushing another way. All we end up is more of the same frightful despotism. Now, I have some more items to get to, but I have to take a break. Before I go, though, I want to ask you to head over to constitutionstudy.com. You can find all the news, all the articles and videos that I publish over there. But more importantly, you can get engaged. This year, my focus for the Constitution Study is to have it become more of a movement than simply a place to go. I want people that will be involved, engaged, asking questions, answering questions, researching. Let's figure out how we can help secure the blessings of liberty and stop waiting for someone else to do it for us. Now, the other thing I'd like to check out is Healthy Cell. They're a leading innovator in supplements designed for health at the cellular level. Now, one of the ones I love is their Immune Super Boost. You know, when you're on the go like I am, it's easy to get run down. Well, the Immune Super Boost is a simple-to-use, travel-ready gel pack that combines over a dozen supplements to keep my immune system functioning properly. And you can try it too. Go to HealthyCell.com and try Immune Super Boost. In fact, try any of their products. Use the code OUTLOUD at checkout and you get 25% off your first order. So please go to HealthyCell.com, check out any of their products, put them in your cart, use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. You'll get 25% off your first order.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. We are the voice of a nation, the American nation, that is. This is Malcolm Out Loud. I invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com, where the fight for liberty and justice continues. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, and well, seeing as we're still near the new year, I thought this would be a good time to take a look at a little bit of history and what we can expect based on recent laws and laws that are going into effect in 2023. What can we expect, or maybe what should we be looking out for? I talked a bit already about the tax code, you know, and I should say the tax is being used to for political ends and other information like that. Well, one of the things we saw is the dueling executives. What do I mean? This has been going on for as long as I've been around, right? You have one president puts in place certain rules, then another president comes along and they take those rules away. They put in different rules. So you really have this, you know, almost a tennis match of rules and regulations. And we have that because we fail to follow the Constitution. See, the president in the executive branch is not supposed to be the one making rules. They're supposed to be executing rules. It's up to Congress to make the laws. But they can't be bothered with that. They're too busy getting, you know, buildings named after them and you know, confiscating trillions of your dollars to spend on their own boondoggles. But what happens when these rules are not simply about the misappropriation of funds, but about your basic fundamental human rights? See, back under the Trump administration, there was a rule that allowed healthcare workers to refuse to perform abortions, sterilizations, or sex change operations that were in violation of their conscience. Right? If it violated your conscience to perform an abortion or a sterilization or sex change, then you could simply refuse and claim it's a conscience violation and the federal government wouldn't come after you. You see, that was under the Trump administration. The Biden administration, by the way, is pulling such a rule. So now, according to the king du jour, if you have a conscience issue with performing abortions, you can be forced to, or you can be punished. Now, technically, yes, you can be allowed to opt out as long as it doesn't produce an undue hardship to their employer. This is based on a law passed way back in 1973 when I was still a youngin'. But what's interesting is apparently this would not impact mandates on transgender surgeries in Catholic hospitals because of a judicial order still in effect. Although now what are we getting into? We got a whole mishmash of, well, you do have conscience pretensions unless it's a burden to your employer and who determines what's an undue hardship, unless, of course, you happen to be working at a Catholic hospital. This is a mess. And in many ways, it's a mess because we stopped legislating and we started regulating. In other words, Congress doesn't pass laws. Those laws aren't debated. They aren't subject to constitutional scrutiny. No. We have the executive branch making up rules. And then unless those rules are challenged, they're assumed to be legal and constitutional. And off we go. Oh, by the way, and this isn't just hospitals. Yeah, the Department of Education, another agency that doesn't legally exist, well, their Office of Civil Rights is investigating a North Texas school district because, well, a superintendent told the librarian to remove LGBT-themed books from the school library. Now, the ACLU complained to the Department of Education back in December. Interesting that this is all based on Title IX. We're back to the Title IX stuff of, does a school have to allow these in a school library designed for minors? Now, in a letter that the superintendent of the school releases, I acknowledge that there are men that think they are women, and there are women that think they are men. I don't have any issues with what people want to believe, but there's no place for it in our libraries. But don't you find it interesting that it's the federal government that's dictating what is and is not in a school library now? I wonder if the education dollars the state of Texas gets is worth all the mishigas, all the regulatory overhead, all the regulation coming out of Washington, D.C. And based on recent past, I don't expect that to change. The fact that we have some changes in Congress, not going to make a difference. We still have the bureaucracy that's going to be regulating our lives rather than allowing our representatives that we hire, that we have authority over, to legislate for us. And again, whether you think it's right for certain material to be left out of or not be allowed in public school libraries or not, the point is, who's deciding? Is it the representatives of the people? Is it the executive branch? Is it a state issue? Is it a federal issue? Our complete disregard for the constitutional structure that was created is leading to a lot of this whiplash, and I fully expect there to be more of this in the future. Now, that said, the fact that we have representatives that legislate for us doesn't mean they do a very good job of it. I've talked in the already a bit about the big omnibus behemoth 4,000-page abomination, but they're still finding more things in there. I mean, I've already mentioned how much money we're giving to Ukraine. I think at this point, total expenditures that U.S. has been spending on Ukraine is up over $100 billion, which is actually more than Russia's entire military budget. Yeah, and again, this isn't a war that we joined by declaration. No, we just keep funding it for us. Of course, there's also money for the Federal Bureau of Intimidation. So almost it was a $500 million increase, and a more. And again, this is the same agency that's been trying to suppress free speech. It's been providing a politically based prosecution. It still has refused to investigate any of the hate crimes related to pro-life organizations. I got a little bit more about that coming up later. But in the middle of all of this, as all of this information being exposed about the political nature of the FBI, we're still funding them. They're getting more and more money. And that's just a couple more things. But what I found interesting, I was reading an article from Ron Paul at the 10th Amendment Center. And he made an interesting point. There's an old saying, right? You want to know what matters to somebody? Look at their checkbook. Where are we spending our money? Well, I believe there's a point to say that Congress's priorities are, well, as Ron Paul put it, authoritarianism and war. That seems to be where the money is going. How to control the American people, and then how to fight wars with other people doing the fighting for us. As an example of controlling the American people, do you remember when there was legislation about they wanted to put what we got nicknamed as kill switches in new vehicles? The idea was simple, right? The car manufacturers had to develop a technology that would keep an eye on the driver, and if the system thought that the driver was impaired in any way, it would not allow the car to run. It's kind of the equivalent of, what do they call it, the breathalyzer in the car, right? If you've been convicted of drunk driving, one of the things they can do in order for you to keep your license is to put a breathalyzer in your car so the car won't start until you blow into the breathalyzer to show that you're not impaired. Now, there's a lot of issues with that, and I'm not saying that that is the solution. But the question then becomes, okay, is it the government's job to regulate our behavior? I'm not talking about punishing us for bad behavior, right? If you are driving a vehicle and you are impaired, either because you're intoxicated or you're on drugs or you're just plain tired or you're not paying attention, any one of these things, and you get into an accident, you are liable. But in America, it seems we don't want to be liable. We don't want to be responsible. We want somebody else to do it for us, and we seem all too readily to turn it over to the federal government. So that idea of, hey, we're going to put stuff in the cars, and if we don't think you're capable of driving, well, then we won't start the car for you. We'll kill the engine. Of course, there's a lot of things in there we don't seem to consider. Where does the federal government get the authority to tell automobile manufacturers what options I have to put in the car, what features I have to put in the car? And don't give me this commerce clause nonsense, because that's not regulating commerce. That's regulating what is in commerce. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is something quite different. But think about this for a second. I talked before about central bank digital currency, CBDCs, and the federal government monitoring every transaction you make and then approving every transaction you make. Well, let me ask you, what happens when the government gets to decide whether or not you get to drive your car? Now, sure, they're saying, well, listen, this is going to be a system that it's on board the car. It's looking at your driving habits. It's looking at you and deciding whether or not you are fit to drive. All right, let's assume, let's start by assuming that that is something that can be done. That there's a, it's a passive system that's monitoring the driver and deciding whether or not. Who sets that algorithm? Who determines what is and is not safe driving? And does it take into consideration our own individual peculiarities? In other words, is it looking at the driver's eyes and determining whether or not they are moving in a certain direction or not? What about somebody with a glass eye or a lazy eye? Is it taking that into consideration? And think about it. You have the situation where the system suddenly decides you are no longer fit for driving while you're doing 75 miles an hour in the left-hand lane at a busy interstate, and it suddenly decides, nope, we're going to shut you down. Is it going to leave you stranded out there? Are you going to be prone to an accident? There's a lot of considerations. There's a lot of things to be considered, even having such a system in your vehicle. But there's more. Seeing, according to former Representative Bob Barr, in the legislation, not only must this be a passive system, there's a back door. In other words, there is a way for government agents to get into the system and turn the car off for you. Not based on your driving, the government suddenly says, oh, we want you to stop. Now, of course, they say, well, look, you have all these high-speed chases, and it is dangerous for people, it's dangerous for law enforcement. Wouldn't it be great if law enforcement can simply press a button, disable the vehicle, and stop the high-speed chase? Yeah, that sounds wonderful. But what does the government have to, what does law enforcement have to do before they're allowed to do that? In other words, can you be going down the highway, minding your own business, following the law, and a law enforcement officer mistake your vehicle for someone else without any provocation, without any probable cause, simply disable your vehicle, and then you have to prove that you're not the person they're looking for? Do you really want the government to be able to simply go in and disable your vehicle? Now, there's, well, you know, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you won't have a problem. Oh, really? How about we learn from some of our other neighbors? Oh, actually, this one's not really a neighbor. How about New Zealand? See, recently, in fact, actually it was back in September, New Zealand police pulled over a vehicle because the trunk was full of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah, they were smuggling fast food to people in Auckland that was locked down. How long do you think before the government says, hey, we're going to lock down and you're not going to be allowed to drive? You're not going to be allowed to cross state lines. You're not going to be allowed to cross city borders. How long before you think somebody comes up with the brilliant idea saying, no, 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 it's not simply for your ability to drive. It's us to keep you safe, to make sure you're obeying the laws, even the laws that are illegal and unconstitutional. Would you really be surprised by something like that? I know I wouldn't, because every time I think the government will never go that far, they do. So do I expect more of this type of regulation in the future? Absolutely. No one in government has given me any reason to believe that our march towards authoritarianism is going to slow, much less stop or reverse course. So what do we do? Well, our federal government, or I should say our framers, when they designed the system, when they made us a union of states, they said, you know what? The states will protect. The states will jealously guard their authority, their power, their rights, and they will prevent the federal government from going out of control. That hasn't worked so well. And I don't think it's so much that the design is wrong. I think the problem is most Americans don't realize that the states created and control the federal government. So we need to look at what the states are doing. And right now, well, some states are doing better than others. Let's talk a little about election laws. We've had some problems with our elections. Have we learned our lesson? Well, apparently not. Back in 2016, Oregon became the first state to implement what's called automatic voter registration. And well, since then, you know, they've got high voter turnout. Wonderful. Well, the Minnesota Secretary of State says not only do they want automatic voter registration in Minnesota, they want it for minors. So before your 18th birthday, you're registered to vote. Governor Whitmer in Michigan, she's also considering automatic voter registration. And considering how the automatic mail-out voting, you know, mailing ballots to everybody who's registered, to me that just seems like they're opening up to easier ways for people to commit fraud. And while we're in Michigan, the Michigan Secretary of State, she wants to crack down on misleading information about ballot measures, voting dates, and other things that could trick people out of voting, at least according to the New York Times. So can we expect things to get better voting-wise in 2024 and beyond? I wouldn't expect it in Minnesota or Michigan. Now, that's not to say there's all bad. There aren't other states doing other things. But if you live in one of those states, ask yourself a question. Isn't the right to vote important enough for some to actually be able to, register to vote? Do we really need to make it so simple? And by doing so, open it up to such fraud? Is that the proper way to husband your right to vote? Now, I've got some more things going on in the States. Before I do, though, I want to let you know, I talk a lot here on the Constitution Study, but I'm one of many voices on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I recommend you go to the website daily, AmericaOutLoud.com. Find out what's going on. Get news, get happenings, and getting it from different points of view. But don't just keep it to yourself. Share it. Share it with friends and family, all the articles, the videos, the podcasts, the stories, so we together can work to help secure the blessings of liberty.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe, air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is X-L-E-A-R.com.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're looking at some recent events and some laws that are coming into effect in the new year and see if we can see a pattern. What can we expect, if anything, to change for the better or for worse? I talked before about some of the tax issues, some of the financial issues. We've talked about some of the election issues. Well, next I'm going to pick up another one that seems to be a perennial issue, and that is the Second Amendment. The right to keep and bear arms, and the fact that a lot of jurisdictions don't think it really matter. Now, my old stomping grounds, the state of New York, has two cities, Rochester and Buffalo, cities I spent a fair amount of time in while I was there. have both denounced lawsuits against gun manufacturers. Why? See, the lawsuit holds that those in the gun industry are accountable because people do bad things with their guns. They manufacture a legally manufactured product that is not deficient or defective in any way, but because some of those firearms are recovered at crime scenes, suddenly it's the manufacturer's fault. This is an irrational point of view, right? We don't do that for vehicle manufacturers. You don't sue, you know, Ford and Toyota when people use their vehicles in crimes, you know, drunk driving, running red lights, or other ways. Why guns? I have a theory. It's called hoplophobia, an irrational fear of firearms. No, actually, let me rephrase. I have two theories. One is an irrational fear of firearms. A lot, you know, it's amazing the number of people who have never been around firearms, or haven't tried firearms, that have these images about what it is to have to use a firearm, and they're terrified of it. In fact, a friend of ours many, many years ago, her father was in law enforcement and taught her gun safety, and she never really liked it. That's nothing against her father. It's just she never really liked it. Well, when her children were getting older, I offered, as I do to almost anybody, I will teach just about anybody basic gun safety, including the operation generally of firearms or occasionally a rifle. And she decided she wanted her children to learn a little bit about gun safety. So she came over and we had a class. And by the end of the class, she was shooting a handgun and she found she wasn't afraid of it. And again, it's not simply guns. I remember as a young man, my parents had a friend that was deathly afraid of flying. Now, my father had gotten his private pilot's license, so he took her up in a small plane. And when she saw what was going on, when she saw what was involved, it became less frightening to her. So part of it, I believe, is hoplophobia. Part of it is a desire to not have an armed populace. Not because they think that some may think because, you know, if you get rid of the guns, guns won't kill people. But part of it is if you get rid of the gun, if you get the guns out of the hands of the quote unquote civilian population, well, then they won't be able to defend themselves. And I much more lean towards the latter because pretty much each and every person I talk to that wants to get guns out of the hands of everyday ordinary people, when something bad happens, the first thing they do is call people with guns. It's the desire to have the government with guns, but not the people with guns. I expect more of this. Now, part of this is because this is the state of New York, which is basically a socialist state. They believe the government is in charge of everything. And the last thing they want is someone that has the power to look the government in the eye and say no and make it stick. But I expect this to spread. And it's funny because this is often positioned against the Lawful Commerce in Arms Act, which basically said, listen, as long as the gun was not defective, it wasn't manufactured or sold in a deceptive way, there's no reason to sue. But we've so far walked away from a basic understanding of rights, of law, that I'm not surprised the state of New York has allowed this. I'm not surprised that cities, these two cities in the state of New York, are pushing this. Now, another thing going on in the states, there are some 27 or more states that will raise the minimum wage in the state to $15 an hour. Now, I've heard a lot of arguments and discussions on both sides. Here's the one question no one seems to be able to answer. Is the work being done worth $15 an hour? I remember when my daughter was young, I had a friend, he had sons that were young, and they used to work for each other, right? I'd have his sons come over and help do some yard work, or my daughter would go over and babysit. And the discussion always went something like this. Well, what should we pay him? Well, what's it worth to you? You tell me what my daughter's time is worth to you, And if I think it's fair and she agrees, then okay. And vice versa, right? If I wanted to have his sons come over and help, it's like, you know, is X amount an hour okay? If he didn't think his children were being taken advantage of, yes. We didn't worry about minimum wage laws. Now, there's a lot of reasons that minimum wage laws are bad. They're destructive. They're corrosive to society. From the basic idea of they make it harder for people to get started. You know, you take again, understand that originally the idea of a minimum wage was to avoid exploitation of new people getting into the workforce. It's this idea now that you have to be able to live on minimum wage. It shouldn't, you know, those types of jobs shouldn't be designed that you, a burger flipper or someone working, doing low-end jobs. It's not a question of can they support a family on that? Is what is their work worth? Because the more expensive you make labor, well, the more incentive you have to exchange labor for automation. Why do you think when you're on the road, you go to a fast food joint and more of them have apps and kiosks? They say, use the app, use the kiosk. Why? It saves them labor costs. The explosion of self-serve checkout in different stores, same thing. It's less expensive for them to buy the machines and have you do the checkout watched by one person than it is to have 6 or 8 or 10 people running registers because the cost becomes so much. But yet now we've decided $15 minimum. Well, it never ends. So now, in order to keep things going, they either have to lay off workers because they can't afford to pay them $15 an hour, or these businesses will have to raise their prices to cover the extra expenses. But of course, raising prices raises the cost of living, which encourages people to want to raise the living wage, the minimum wage, which becomes a positive feedback loop, and it becomes a destructive cycle. Now, of course, it's not just a Fed, it's not just this. How about universities? Stanford University, which I believe is a public university, a publicly owned university, well, they've created a list of what they refer to as offensive words, words you're not allowed to use on campus anymore. It's part of what they call the Elimination of Harmful Language Initiative. Now, it's a long list, but I find it interesting. Addict or addicted, these are now words you're not supposed to use. A blind study or a blind review, or someone who's confined to a wheelchair or handicapped, paraplegic, quadriplegic. In other words, words that accurately describe a person are now considered, well, they're not allowed. You can't refer to someone as a graybeard or senile. You can't refer to someone as from the Philippine Islands. Not quite sure where that one comes from. You cannot refer to somebody as brave. You can't refer to burying the hatchet or having someone being a guru or low man on the totem pole. This goes on and on and on. And you should look at the example. You should look at this list because it tells me two things. One is Stanford University does not believe in free speech. Not at all surprised, not exactly a shock, but the university, and I imagine many others, are anti-free speech centers. Because the words they're removing, we're not talking about pejoratives, right? We're not talking the N-word, the F-word. We're talking about someone, again, someone who is an addict. Or someone who is tone deaf. These are not, or a walk-in office. These are not terms that, these are not pejorative terms. But we've become so obsessed with, everything is offensive to somebody that we've destroyed the English language and we're destroying our society. How can you have a meaningful conversation if you're spending your entire time deciding if a phrase that means something accurate, like Hispanic, or what we used to refer to as an Indian suburb. I love the Karens. They don't want Karen. Yeah, well, Karens come up with a definition. But if you can't, if you're more afraid that using these words might offend somebody, then free speech is gone. Free speech on Stanford University does not exist anymore. And that's going to expand. That's going to grow because I expect it to be picked up by more universities and eventually by different governments. And we watch as free speech simply drifts off into the ether. Because we, the American people, follow this nonsense. I mean, just think about this. Imagine we followed the recommendations from Stanford University and ceased using the word American because it could insinuate that, you know, some might think that being American is special because there are, in North, South, and Central America, there are 40-some-odd countries. Of course, only one of them has America in the name, but we're not going to worry about that. But the other thing interesting is, in all of this talk, you know, one of the groups that people don't seem to have a problem picking on, calling names, or being a Christian. The rise in attacks, actually it's funny, it's Christian and Jews. There have been a rash of, for decades I should say, there's been a heightened amount of crimes against Jews, especially in New York City. And that's been growing recently. But an analysis issued by the Family Research Council, there were at least 420 acts of hostility against U.S. churches between January 2018 and September of 2022. Attacks such as vandalism, arson, gun-related incidents, bomb threats, and more. You never hear about those on TV. You never hear about those in the news. And interesting, according to FRC, 57 of those incidents, well, they were abortion-related. And in fact, there have been no less than 30 pro-abortion attacks against churches just since SCOTUS released the Doe v. The Jackson's Women's Health opinion. So apparently, people are really worried about offending Philippine Islanders or blacks or Hispanics, but when it comes to actual attacks on Christian and pro-life centers, we're not worried so much. So what can we surmise from this brief look at what's been going on around us? Well, I keep coming back to Albert Einstein and is saying that doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, is the definition of insanity. We watched as we do this, we run this country the same way. People keep looking for a way to fix our problems. They never look at the one that's actually in their control. We have a Congress with, I think it was 18% approval just before the election, but a 96% re-election rate. So we're missing the point. The point isn't that Congress as a whole is not doing their job right. It's that the congressmen and women are the ones not doing the job right. And until we recognize that it's actually the individuals, ones that work for us, Congress isn't going to get better. And as one person was fond of pointing out, that the Constitution is gone. It's not that it's gone. It's right there. We just refuse to pick it up and use it. I talked about this quite a lot on my tour last year. The Constitution is a tool, and it's laying there in the dirt, but no one will pick it up and use it. And what's interesting is when people do pick it up and use it, well, one, it's quite empowering. I can tell you myself, it's quite empowering. But the other part is you'll often be attacked for doing so, for pointing out what the Constitution actually says, for following what the Constitution actually says. You should see the names I got called for pointing out that the CDC does not legally exist. People didn't call me out for my research being wrong. They just called me names for disagreeing with the status quo. Now, the question is, will you stand for that? You know, if all you can do, if you can't beat my argument except by calling me names, then I pretty much figure I got the argument pretty well made. See, if we, I keep coming back. If we want things to be different, we must look at how we are running our country, not the politicians, we the people, how we're picking our representatives, how we're holding them accountable, how we're treating them. We must look at that. And if what we're doing is not working, if what they're doing, if they're acting in contravention of the Constitution and we do nothing about it, then we're just as culpable. We are just as responsible because they are our employees. And until we start treating them that way and holding them accountable for what they do, nothing is going to change. And even though people look at me funny when I say the way you fix Washington, D.C. starts right in your backyard, it's still true. Even if you don't change D.C. in the next election or the next decade, you can make your life happier, better, freer by following, by picking up the Constitution and using it as a tool it was intended for. Now, hopefully you'll let other people know. You'll share this information, including the fact that you listen to the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard in the iHeartRadio Network. Or that you listen on podcasts, because the episodes usually come out, oh, a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on your favorite podcast apps. Go to the homepage at AmericaOutLoud.com. Find those links. Don't just use them. Share them. Don't simply wait for someone else to fix the problem. You start fixing the problem. And by doing so, we can share in the blessings of liberty that is the inheritance of everyone.